Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Beauty Talk. I'm your host, Janice Snell, for today, April 27th. Tonight, our guest is makeup artist Ricky Wilson. But before we speak with Ricky, I just want to remind you all that our call-in number tonight is 914-803-4399. Again, that number is 914-803-4399. So you can call that number if you have a question or a comment. And also, you can join us on our tweet chat tonight by using the hashtag TownBeautyLounge. And I'm going to pass it over to Denise because I believe she has some beauty news for us.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. For all of our veteran face and body painters, as well as our newbies alike, you can spend your Memorial Day weekend in sunny Fort Lauderdale, Florida, at the Face and Body Art International Convention, known pretty much as FABAIC. The convention will take place May 22nd through May 25th with the theme Blast from the Past. FABAIC Art Through the Years. For more information on that convention and how you can register, and also for a detailed list of the classes that will be taught there and some of the instructors that will be teaching, you can go to FABAIC.com. That's FABAIC.com. If you are a nail art artist, consider competing in the Famous Nail Art Competition at Fame Expo. In Pasadena, California, on Saturday, June 28th and Sunday, June 29th. There are four competitions and three categories within each competition. The competitions are soak-off gel salon art design, nail art acrylic and gel competition, selfie one-hand salon art, and flat art tip box. Those are the individual competitions, and the three categories in each competition will be Division 1, which is for first-timers who have never competed. Division 2 is for those who have competed but never placed first, second, or third. And Division 3 is for those who have competed and placed first, second, or third. And the trophies will be awarded in all three divisions of each of the four categories. And for more information on that, you can visit Fame Expo's website at fameexpo.com. That's P as in Paul, H as in Harry, AMEXPO.com. And last but not least, we mentioned this last week, but I just wanted to make sure I got this out there again. This is something else that's taking place at Fame Expo. It's one of the master classes, and it's Raising Brows with Kelly Baker at Fame Expo, June 29th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. All participants will receive a custom Kelly Baker Brows eyebrow kit that's valued at $145 and a two-day VIP pass to Fame Expo. The cost of the class is $325. The class is limited to the first 50 attendees that register. So if you're interested in Kelly Baker's Raising Brows Masterclass, then please go out to the Fame Expo website, fameexpo.com, and register for that. Again, it's limited to the first 50 attendees. And if anyone's out there who's on BBM, formerly known as BlackBerry Messenger, it's now just known as BBM Messenger, it's open to iPhone, BlackBerry, Android. So if you're interested, download, and you can follow Beauty Talk the channel, I'm sorry, you can follow the Beauty Talk channel on BBN to get all updates on Beauty Talk, who our guests will be, and any other information that we give out on the show. You can follow that on our channel, as well as participate in our Beauty Talk BBN chat group. So for more information, you can just listen to the show, and I will be announcing again at the end of the show those exact names of the channels and the exact PIN numbers and everything for those groups.
All right. Thank you very much. So, Ricky, again, I want to welcome you to the show tonight.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We're happy that you're here. Why don't you start off the conversation tonight by just by introducing yourself to our audience and telling us all what inspired you to become a makeup artist.
Hi, guys. My name is Ricky Wilson, and I have been a makeup artist for about 16 years. I started when I was about 19, and I was in L.A., and, you know, I really didn't have, like, the growing up as a child playing in makeup story. My story actually began when I was a cheerleader.
Oh, wow.
I had a friend who was doing her makeup. We were getting ready for a game, and she actually let me, after I basically twisted her arm, do her makeup, her eye makeup. And everyone liked it. So I ended up going and getting like a little caboodle, and it was full of drugstore makeup, and I became the makeup artist to the cheerleader. And I never thought doing that, it would have taken me to where it has today.
And so there was no formal training?
No formal training at all. Like, I mean, whoever I can get into my chair, I just kind of, I mean, I've always had like a really big attraction to fashion. Like, I've always loved magazines. So basically what I did was I would go out to the drugstore and get a lot of magazines. And whoever I can get in my chair, I would actually try to replicate the looks that I would see on magazine covers on my sister, my mom, my brother, whoever I can get, myself. And I think that that actually taught me a lot about skin tones, you know, because at this time, the makeup that you saw on the magazine covers were not necessarily makeup of the people that I was doing, you know, the tones. So I definitely think that that taught me a lot about how color is different on different skin tones without ever having been trained as a formal makeup artist.
Nice. Let me ask you, because you weren't trained, you know, and you went out and you bought fashion magazines, what advice would you give besides the fashion, you know, looking at fashion magazines and trying to replicate it? What other advice would you give to those artists who are out there, no formal training, but this is what they want to do?
I definitely think now, because the industry has grown tremendously, like I got into makeup, like my first makeup job, I worked at the MAC counter in Nordstrom. And the training was really extensive. So it was basically on-the-job training because I didn't even know how to match a foundation at the time. And I worked in the MAC store with some amazing makeup artists. So they kind of took me under their wing and kind of gave me like a crash course in training before I became a trainer for MAC. And then my career kind of blossomed. But I will say that I think education is important. You know, makeup school, and if you can't go to the makeup school, you can definitely take pro classes that are offered at some of the boutiques. Like a lot of the makeup artist brands have pro classes that they'll bring in, like, you know, a top makeup artist, and they'll cover a subject. I've done a few for Makeup Forever with Red Carpet Beauty, and I definitely think that taking like those targeted courses really just helps you, and just getting out there and practicing. Like, a lot of times people are like, oh, I don't want to do retail because, you know, I just want to get out there and start freelancing. But what I always say is having a retail job in cosmetics is a really good stepping stone because you're actually putting makeup on people, you know, and you're getting paid while you're doing it, and it's basically like your practice. You have people of all different ages, all different races and ethnicities. So you can definitely practice if you have a retail cosmetic job, even if it's a part-time, like 3 days a week, or even if you're doing freelance for, like, a brand, you can definitely get out there and practice.
Absolutely. So let me ask you, when you were practicing on your mom and your sister, your brother and yourself, how did you know if it was right? And I know you were trying to replicate what you saw in the magazine. Did you use the magazine as a guide?
I used the magazine as a guide, but I look back at those pictures and everything I was doing was wrong. So it definitely wasn't right. It looked crazy, to be honest. I have a friend that is threatening to post pictures on social media of when I first started doing her makeup. But, it was a learning curve, and it was something that I always say, like, it's something that I always say to people that are looking to get into makeup or people that get frustrated just doing their own makeup. And it's, you know, just practice makes perfect. Like, if you were to see my first attempt at a smoky eye, like, you would never have me on your show, you know. But you just get there and you just practice and practice, and whatever you find difficult, like, you know, practice it harder. Like, I feel like a lot of people rest on what they know, and right. If they master a certain thing when it comes to beauty, they'll, like, let's say they do a really fierce cat eye, but they need work on their smoky eyes. So what they do is they continue to do the cat eye because they're comfortable with it, but they need to kind of challenge themselves. Like, if you can't do a perfectly lined and filled-in red lip that looks magazine-worthy, you know, that's just practice. Put red lips on everyone until you get it perfect. So I definitely think that, you know, going back to what we said earlier, just, I mean, it was wrong, but it taught me how to perfect it over time. And I feel like nothing happens overnight. It was definitely over time. It took me like about a year and a half to 2 years to even consider myself a makeup artist, even though I was hired as a MAC makeup artist 6 months after I started doing and dibbling and dabbling in makeup. So I didn't even call myself a makeup artist until after 2 years.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Wow. Well, speaking of a makeup artist, calling yourself a makeup artist, what do you think makes a great makeup artist?
A great makeup artist. I think a great makeup artist is someone who first and foremost listens. You know, you have to have like a very flexible personality when it comes to doing makeup. You're working with different clients, and, you know, a lot of people want to get out there and you know, go on to shoots, and you have to know set etiquette, and you have to really be flexible in this day and age in makeup. You know, you can't have any attitude, and you really have to listen. I mean, if you aspire to work with celebrities, the first thing they're going to tell you is what they like and what they don't like. And if you're not listening and you do something that they don't like, you're not going to be hired again. So what I do is I listen more than I talk when I go to work, especially if it's somebody that I have just met. Maybe I've worked with him like once or twice, and that's what gets them to continually hire me. Because if I went in and I just did what I wanted to do and didn't listen to what they wanted, then they probably will never hire me again. So I think that great makeup artists, they practice. They're good at what they do. They recognize what they need to improve on. Because I always say that I don't care how long you've done makeup, if you feel like you've, like, learned everything, then you should probably get out of the business, because we are in a very, like, changing business. You know, right now I'm learning social media and makeup. Like, I didn't know it was that important, but I just had a meeting with my agents, and, like, so I'm trying to tackle social media and makeup. So you can definitely learn even after you're in the game for a while.
Right. You mentioned celebrities and listening to what they like and don't like. What do you think a celebrity is looking for in a makeup artist, besides a great listener?
I think that when it comes to celebrity makeup artists versus makeup artists, there's no difference. It's just, you know, you have somebody in your chair that is well known, you know. But I definitely think that they need to know, without interrogating you, that you know your stuff, you know, because when they sit in the chair, they don't have time really to tell you and to narrate the entire process of makeup. Like normally they're working when they get into hair and makeup. They're on their email, they're talking about their schedule, they're getting briefed on a show that they're about to do, they're getting questions handed to them, they're doing all this other stuff while they're getting their hair and makeup done. So if they have to take away from that work that they're doing and tell you everything that you need to know about their face, then you probably won't get hired again. So it's good to be a good listener, but to also really just kind of know. Like what I do is I go onto Google if I haven't worked with someone, and I'll just look at their look, because the big thing about celebrities is that there's very few that have variation in their looks. You know, a lot of them have their signature looks. You know, a lot of them wear red lipstick 9 times out of 10. A lot of them stay in smoky eyes. So you kind of have to have an idea of how they like to look on red carpet. So it's not like, oh, if you see Kerry Washington on Scandal, you're going to do her makeup like it's done on Scandal. You know, you have to definitely see how she's looking when she's going to events. So I think that that's another thing that I do as well. It's like if I haven't worked with them before, I'll definitely go on to Google and or Wire Image and just look at some of their recent events and to see how they're wearing their makeup. Because if I come in with a heavy hand, they probably will have you remove some. And if I don't put enough on, then you have to put a lot on at the end, which in turn can make them late. And then, you know, it's a bad situation.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And prime example of what you just said, I remember, and I do the same thing. I always go online and look at the look. But I remember the very first time, it was some years ago, when I worked with Kerry Washington. Of course, I looked up her look. And then, of course, I had a conversation with her assistant before going. But I had, I looked at her pictures. I went in, I did her makeup, and when she looked in the mirror, she's like, oh, my God, it's just like you've been doing my makeup all along.
Yes,
and then
yes.
It just like that. And you're right. You just have to know when you go in. Sometimes you don't have to ask a lot of questions. You just kind of know just by doing the research first.
And definitely. Like you do what they're comfortable with, and then you add, like, your own little spice.
Exactly.
For me, it's like that extra coat of mascara. I'm always obsessed with mascara, so I'll put like false lashes and like 4 coats of mascara on. One of my clients, she's like, Ricky, put the mascara down, sweetie, okay? Like, you already put mascara on me. I can feel my lashes. And I'm like, I know, but the last picture I saw of you, you know, you don't like to wear false lashes, so I have to do this so your lashes can show up. And then she's like, okay.
Sometimes you can talk them into stuff.
Right. You can twist their arm a little bit. And I find that once you have a relationship with certain people, you know, they just become a lot more relaxed, and they pretty much let you do whatever you want to do.
Right.
You know, I love a client that loves variety. You know, I always say that if I had one face and just one eyeshadow palette and one lipstick – and one eyeliner, I would probably quit doing makeup, you know? Like, I need variety. Like, I'm not the makeup artist that puts, like, neon green and orange on everyone. I think that there's a market for that. But, you know, based on my clients and what it is that I do, you know, I can push the envelope a little bit. You know, I can do, like, a green smoky eye or a plum smoky eye. I don't always have to have, like, a beige eyeshadow or taupe. You know, I do that a lot, but with the clients that I work with, I can definitely have a little fun. I've been into using, like, purple lipstick lately and orange lipstick. So that's always cool when you get somebody cool enough to kind of take a risk. But then at the same time, you don't want it to be bad press.
Right. And, you know, when you're working with celebrities, especially if someone that's established, they're not new to getting hair and makeup done, they know what they like, and they know how they need to look to be camera ready, you know, whether it's for film and television or whether it's for the, you know, red carpet ready. They know how they're supposed to look, or how they want to look, rather. So, again, that's why I think it's great, like the example you just said, is just doing the research, looking to see how they normally wear their makeup, and then kind of go from there, and then you can kind of add afterwards. after you see that, okay, yes, everything looks good and they like it, then you can kind of do your extra thing.
Yes, definitely.
The best way.
There's one question that I ask if I just meet someone. I always ask, like, what color or what makeup style do you absolutely not like?
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of gives you an idea. You know, if they just sit down, like 9 times out of 10, they sit down, oh, you're the expert. You know, we've all heard this before.
Right.
You're the expert.
Yes.
Do whatever you like. And then you do whatever you like. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, I don't like this. I don't like eyeshadow that goes there. I don't like mascara underneath my lashes. You know, I don't like red lipstick. I'm like, okay, but you just said do whatever you want. So I feel like asking that question, even if they say, oh, you're the expert, I'll just ask, like, okay, yeah, I definitely know that, but I want to make sure that you're comfortable. So, you know, is there something that you don't like? Are you a lover of pink lipstick? Do you like red? Do you like bold colors? Do you like nudes? And then it'll start to jog their mind. And then they'll say, oh, my God, I'm not a pink person. And then you're like, okay, so you won't choose pinks. Or I don't like purple eyeshadow. Okay, cool. And then you know not to reach for your plum palette. So definitely that question has helped me tremendously.
And you know what? Those questions, and that works for your clients that are not celebrities as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, like anyone that's getting their makeup done, like that will help. Like if you have somebody in the chair, the other thing that I do just to kind of make things streamlined is I don't pull out everything in my kit. You know, like I bring my kit with me, but I literally take out like just the barest things. Like if you go to my Instagram and you'll see my setup is just like a few eyeshadow palettes, a few lipsticks, you know, maybe one blush palette, because I feel like if you put out too much, then they're going to look around and they're going to have too many options and they're going to say, oh, what about that? What about that eyeshadow? That looks like it has a sparkly gray. Oh, I like that taupe over there. And then it just becomes very confusing. So I have the stuff hidden in my kit. If they if they request something, I'll go into my kit and get it. But I just pull out, like, exactly what I know that I'm going to use or what I think I might be using for the job.
Right. That's some good advice, to not put everything out.
No. And if you pick something up, make sure that you keep it in your hand. Like, you know, especially for those of you that are, like, going to your kit and you're, like, kind of looking to see where you want to go. Like, people are normally looking at you, like, if you're doing a wedding trial or, you know, if you have, like, somebody that's going to, you know, a prom even, like, they're looking at you. So they're looking at you as the expert. And if you look confused and if you're picking stuff up and putting it back and picking stuff up and putting it back, they're going to immediately think that you don't know what you're doing. And then that is going to lead to, like, a lack of trust. So one thing that I do, even if I have 20 million things going on in my head and it's, like, Oscar Sunday and I'm stressed out because this client came 30 minutes late and I have, like, 15 minutes to do her makeup before the next client, if I pick something up, I just take it over there. I'll put it down on my station, and even if I don't use it, it'll still be there. You know, like, I just won't put it back in my kit.
Speaking of kit, what do you think are some essential products that every makeup artist should have in their kit?
Gosh, like general products or like...
Well, not products, just products or items that should be in, you think, every makeup artist should
have. Let's see. I have a ton of products that I use, but I can say, like, the products that, like, I absolutely use every time I'm doing makeup. Like, Beauty Blender is something that is a staple. I normally carry the black one just because I'm a guy. So pink Beauty Blender is kind of like, you know, a little how you doing for me. And I mean, it's cute, but it's like pink sponge. So I carry the black ones. And I also love, like primers. Like I love the Makeup Forever like all matte primer. I feel like I use that a lot. Even if I'm doing somebody that is dry, I still put that in the T-zone because everyone kind of shines a little bit in the T-zone for the most part, especially if they're under camera lights. So I definitely put that down first. And it also helps the foundation not look like it's kind of settled into the pores on the nose. What else do I love? Flash Color Palette from Makeup Forever, I love. I always keep Dior Show Blackout Mascara. Like, I keep about five of those. Yeah, like, Blackout Mascara is really good, especially if you have somebody that already has mascara on and you just need to refresh it without clumping. So I definitely love Blackout Mascara. I also love touch-up products, too. Like, touch-up products kind of save my life. So I'll have, like, a MAC bronzer, you know, in bronze or matte bronze. Those are the two that I carry because I feel like I can do an entire face with some bronzer and foundation and a mascara. So, you know, you can definitely take bronzer across the eyelid or in the crease, and you can put it on the cheeks, and sometimes you can put it on the lips and put lip balm on and make like a tint to the lipstick, or like a lipstick. But, you know, I definitely have like a less is more approach when it comes to makeup, and I just feel like I've already been there. Like, when it comes to applying makeup, it seems like every makeup artist goes through this curve where they want to put 20 eyeshadows on each eye, and then you're realizing that, hey, you know, if you just put one or two eyeshadows on each eye, you can get the same impact, and you actually are bringing out the eyes and not the eyeshadow colors.
Right.
So, yeah, I just went off on a tangent. But, yeah, we were talking favorite products. So I mentioned mascara. I mentioned bronzer. I mentioned Beauty Blender. I like shadow shields. I use those a lot, the little patches that go underneath the eye to catch the eyeshadow from falling. And the reason that I use those is because in my type of work, I can't do the eyes first. I used to do the eyes first when I worked at MAC, and that was just the thing that we kind of trained. But I have to do complexion first now because I'm always under such a strict time restraint. So if I get the eyes all glammed up and I'm having lashes on or whatever, and then all of a sudden I'm in my zone trying to make these eyes fierce, and I'll get like, okay, she has like 3 minutes to walk. And if you have to do a complexion, which to me is the most important part to make them look extremely flawless in 3 minutes, that's not cool. You know,
exactly.
So I would rather spend 10 minutes and do foundation and then spend 2 minutes on eyes with the shadow shields than to do the flip side. So I love those.
And, you know, another thing about doing foundation first, because, I mean, years ago it was such a big deal on Beauty Talk if you were team foundation first or team eyes first. And when you do the foundation first, like if you're, like, let's just say you're working on a television set or you're shooting with a photographer, there's always time to touch up. There's always time to add, you know, to something, to your makeup job. So, you know, even if you just got like a lid color on or a crease color or whatever it is you're doing, when you get to set, there's always time to, you know, tweak and add more before you shoot. I'd much rather just spend more time on the skin and then save the eyes for later.
Right. And I definitely think that skin is so important. I think that that's a huge myth and an opportunity for a lot of makeup artists. Like, how can you get someone's skin to look flawless without really adding a ton of makeup?
Right. That's an art all in itself.
It really took years. Like, for me, I'll just use, even if somebody has bad skin or problematic skin, to keep it PC, I'll just use, like, a BB cream or a tinted moisturizer all over the face. And I'll use concealer and just lightly dust it with a powder, and the skin looks fine to me. You know, I feel like a lot of times people, like, cake it on, but that's only going to look good for about 30 minutes to an hour. And I learned that in doing red carpet stuff. Like, they would leave my chair, and I'm not with them, and I'd be like, oh, my gosh, she looks amazing. And then I go and look at the pictures on Wire Image when I first started doing the red carpet stuff, and you would see the foundation and lines and wrinkles. And I was like, gosh, you know, I really did a good job in her makeup, but it doesn't look good. So I felt like since nobody taught me how to be a red carpet makeup artist, I had to figure out how to get the makeup not to settle in the crease, you know. So I just started not to put makeup in lines and wrinkles. and it's definitely worked out a lot better. You know, like a lot of my clients, they have really good skin, but some of them are a little bit up there, you know, and what do? Like if you take a heavy concealer and conceal underneath the eyes and when they smile and you see like a lot of expression lines, those expression lines are going to be full of foundation and concealer if you use something that's too heavy. So I kind of observe their face and see, you know, because a lot of times you see these people in magazines and you don't see any lines and wrinkles thanks to the beautiful work of Photoshop. But then when you see them in person, you're like, oh, gosh, you know, there's crow's feet, there's lines, and, you know, that foundation is just really going to settle in there. So I always try to prevent that from happening at all costs.
Absolutely. Tell me a little bit about your philosophy to more makeup.
My biggest makeup philosophy is to have fun with it because it's not permanent, unless you get your makeup tattooed, which I'm like, you know. But, you know, have fun with makeup. It's not permanent, you know, and definitely, like, experiment. You know, some of my best makeup looks came together by accident. Like, I did something that I was relying on something that I knew, and then I needed something different, so I added something completely out of the norm, and that ended up being one of my makeup looks that I loved. You know, I was just at a shoot recently, and, you know, she looked pretty, but I was just, it was just like, it was something wrong, and it was something missing, and I was like, gosh, you know, what's missing? So I actually messed up the makeup. Like, I didn't add any dirt or anything. I literally messed up her eyebrows because they were too perfect. I took away some of the concealer to remove and show some of her dark circles and kind of caked up the eyeshadow with some 8-hour cream, and it looked wonderful. So I think that, you know, I'm kind of attracted to, like, imperfect makeup.
Right. Nice. What do you think makes a woman beautiful?
I think confidence. You know, like when someone makes up and, you know, whatever they have on, like that's what I love about models, because they work some of the ugliest, by our standards, makeup. And they just make it look serious because of the confidence that they exude. You know, they have black eyeshadow all the way up to their eyebrows, and their eyebrows are bleached blonde, and they have black hair and, you know, crazy stripes on their cheeks, and they still make it look beautiful. So I definitely think that, you know, confidence is something that really, like, makes a woman beautiful. Like, if you throw on a red lip, and, you know, you hold your head high and you know that that red lip looks sexy, and, you know that your eyeshadow or your eyelashes look sexy, like nobody can't tell you anything. I think that that is definitely the most beautiful thing, like in whatever medium, because I feel like makeup is a reflection of a woman's personality. And a lot of times since the beginning of time, women have had things that kind of define them. And a lot of these things actually come from beauty, you know, like they're defined by their eyebrows, or they're defined by their signature lip shape and lip color, or they're defined by their chiseled cheekbones with contour powder. So, and I'm sure that we all know who these people are, or their eyeliner, like if we're talking like Audrey Hepburn, you know. So I definitely think that, you know, all of these women are confident and they're iconic, but at the same time, they have something that's truly their signature, and they own it. You know, I'm not the makeup artist that says, oh, you have to do smoky eye and light lips, vice versa. If you want to do a smoky eye, dark eyebrows, and dark lips, and walk down the street of any major city, as long as you're confident and that's a look and it looks like you meant to do it, then you better work.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. You said you've been in the business for 16 years. That's the same amount of time my sister and I have both have been in the business as well. What are some of the changes that you've seen? And I know social media is big, but besides social media, what are some of the changes that you've seen in the industry since you first started?
Ooh, I think outside of social media, the biggest change is kind of like a lazy makeup artist, like
mm-hmm.
the lazy makeup artist syndrome. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not bashing anybody that's out there, but it's all coming from love. But there's two things. I always say that you definitely need to pay your dues. You know, you need
yep.
to work. You need to get out there. And, you know, there's many things that you are going to have to do for free, pro bono, before you get to making, like, a certain amount of money or getting a certain rate. And the other thing is to do makeup not relying on post-production. Like, I hear this a lot.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm at a shoot, I was recently at a shoot where we were doing a lot of different actresses, and there was a lot of makeup artists at the same time. And the photographer was asking about these clumpy eyelashes on one of the actresses. And the makeup artist said, oh, you know, they can just fix it in post. And anyone that I train, I always
mm-hmm.
say, do makeup like there's no Photoshop.
Right.
Do makeup so perfect that only minimal retouching is required. So if your lash is clumpy and you didn't want it to be clumpy, or even if you did and the photographer is complaining about it, just go and fix it. Because if the photographer doesn't like it, then that means that he's not inspired to take a good picture.
Right.
So I always say that those are two of the biggest changes. Like, just, you know, like, don't be lazy. Like, fix your makeup. You know, take your client into natural light after you finish doing their makeup. If natural light isn't available, take them into a restroom where there's white light. I always say that if you look good in white light, you look good in any light. So you can definitely inspect the makeup. Like, look at the makeup from different angles. You know, like, look at it straight on, and then look at your makeup from the side profile, and then tilt their head all the way up towards the ceiling. I think that a lot of makeup artists forget about the area underneath the chin. And sometimes there's a collection of foundation there. Sometimes there's some contour powder that didn't really get blended out because you couldn't see. So you can definitely, you definitely kind of, like, before someone leaves my chair, I do this little routine. It almost looks like we're doing a neck stretch where I'll look at them and then I'll lift their head all the way up, look underneath the chin. I'll put their head down to see their hairline, and then I turn their head from left all the way and then right all the way just to make sure that everything's good, because the makeup has to look good at every angle.
Right. Right. What do you think? Do you think there's a solution to this lazy makeup artist syndrome? Or is it something that is going to go away, you think?
I hope it goes away. You know, I mean, because I really wish that everything that I did, I can just put, like, 4 Instagram filters on it and it looked fabulous. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like I really wish it goes away, because, I mean, I come from the school where the trainer at MAC, when we were going for certification, I mean, God bless her, but she was so mean, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, she would walk up to me and ask me, like, Ricky, can you photograph those lips? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, no. They're uneven. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And she's like, this side is a little bit, like, round, and that side is kind of going up and down. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, that's kind of how her lips are. She's like, well, yeah, but it's your job to even them out. So I'm like, oh, okay. And then I went back to the drawing board and evened out her lips. So I hope it goes away, you know, because like digital imagery and all that stuff, it's fun and it looks pretty, but you definitely want to be proud of your work. You know, I get pictures back that are over retouched and I literally don't put them up because that's not the work that I did. You know, if a photographer feels like they need to change the color of the lipstick or the eyeshadow that I did, then it mm-hmm. means that they didn't like the work that I did. And that's happened to me on a few occasions. So I'm like, hey, I did black eyeshadow, but you wanted to make it fuchsia. So you didn't like my black, and I'm not going to put this picture up.
Hmm.
It happens to the best of them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, people who have been doing it for a long time, they're not exempt from that.
God. It seems like you get it worse.
Right.
It's like, yeah, because people, like, they, it's not that they want to break you down. It's just like, you know, you're supposed to be, like, whatever, makeup artist, you know, so they, mm-hmm. they, it's almost like they're harder on you.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Well, how did you,
so you
go
always,
from,
oh.
how did you go from self-taught to 6 months later working with Matt?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the time in between working with Matt and now you're being represented by an agency. At what point did you start being represented by an agency? But how do you accomplish all of that being self-taught?
It's funny. At Mac, they have this product knowledge manual, and mm-hmm. I never refer to it as a Mac Bible, but that's what they call it. But it has every information, anything on every product that you want to know. And I was such a nerd back then that when I got hired, I would take that on lunch, and I read it cover to cover multiple times, and I learned about the products on paper. And then I was eager to try out the products and the formulations on people. So mm-hmm. I worked at MAC for about 6 months, and then I got promoted to a resident trainer for one of the stores that I worked in L.A. And I did that job for about another 6 months, and then I got promoted to the senior trainer. And I took care of about 14 stores, and everyone in my stores was certified up to fashion show.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wanted to move to New York because I came for Fashion Week. And I said, I want to move to New York because I want to put makeup on famous people, and it's not happening for me in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up moving to New York, and I was here, and I was, like, not putting makeup on anyone famous.
Right.
Still working for Mac. And, like, okay, where is my life going? And then I actually found Dior. And I was recruited by them to be a national makeup artist. So I never worked behind a Dior counter. I started off as a national for New York, Boston, and Philly, and Connecticut, and D.C., and I did that job, and because I was here in New York, Dior had a lot of celebrity events. So the first few celebs that they sent me on were Sharon Stone and
mm-hmm.
Kylie Minogue. So those were the celebs that kept calling me back. And I always say that I got my agency representation because of Sharon Stone. She was the only celeb, really, in my book when I sent my book over to Cloutier. And, you know, she was just in there a lot. So they're like, oh, you work with Sharon Stone. I was like, yeah, who else do you work with? Kylie Minogue, but pretty much like Sharon Stone and Emmy Rossum. You know, those were my people back then. And they took a chance with me, and I've been with them for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm finally starting to feel like I'm not the new kid on the block at the agency, which is cool. I mean, this agency represents Francesca Talat, who is amazing, Kalia Strong, who's absolutely amazing, and a lot of other really top makeup artists. So when I first got signed, I really felt like, you know, oh, I'm just little old Ricky, not doing much. But, you know, nothing happens overnight. You know, it's definitely over time. And once it starts happening, it's like, you know, it doesn't really stop. But it's up to you to, like, market yourself. But you have to make sure that you're marketing yourself in the proper way and in the proper fashion.
Right. Absolutely. You said, you know, you had a celebrity in your book. For those makeup artists out there who are seeking agency representation but don't have a celebrity in their book, is it impossible for them to be represented? Or if the answer to that is no, then what would you suggest them to do if they don't have a celebrity in their book?
I think that a lot of agencies kind of want you to have celebrities nowadays,
okay.
But then you're caught in between like a rock and a hard place because you're like, okay, it's your job to get me the celebrities, and I don't know any. So what do I do?
Right.
You know?
Right.
So the answer to that, and it's very easy, is start assisting. So go into your local agency and bring in your portfolio, or if you don't have a portfolio, see if they are taking assistance and assist makeup artists. And through assisting, you can actually get represented. Like my first assistant, I still work with her a lot, but my first assistant actually got signed to a pretty big agency. It's the Magnet Agency. And like a lot of times assistants get signed to that agency. Like there was Francesca Talat's assistant. Two of her assistants got signed to Cloutier Remix just by assisting her on different jobs. And, you know, and then you start to become known, and, you know, it's not like you're trying to, like, take over, but that's pretty much what you do. Like, you assist, and, you know, photographers start to know you, and hair people start to know you, and then, you know, you can get some really cool shoots. And if it's a matter of, like, putting together your book, I always say if you've done a ton of photo shoots and you take in a book that's full of stuff that's mediocre, then, you know, that's not what you want to do. Even if you have, like, 10 pictures and take out all the stuff that doesn't look great like you would see in a magazine, even if it's a test shoot, okay, you take out all the stuff. You don't have to fill the book. And this is coming directly from my agency because, like I said, I had Sharon Stone. I had some photo shoots that I had done, and I had Sharon Stone. That was it. So it's like I didn't have 50 pictures in a book, you know, and I expressed that to her. I was like, I'm sorry, my book isn't full. She's like, you don't need a full book. What you need is something that shows your work and your best work. So she went through the book, and she told me, you know, I would take this out. I would take that out. I would take this out. And then she asked me why I didn't have a lot of black women in my book. So I told her a story. I said, when I first moved to New York, I was told by someone who I thought was a mentor that it was best for me not to have, like, an overwhelming amount of photo shoots with black women being a black man because it would pigeonhole me into being just known as someone that's doing black makeup.
Right.
And my agent said that is completely false. She said, because I have two jobs that I can send you out for right now, but when the client wants to see your book and you have, like, two pictures of black women in your book, then you're not going to get hired for that job. I don't care how black you are. So,
right.
So, so since then, I have definitely changed it up. You know, it's really good to be versatile. I think that versatility, just making sure that you can do anyone that gets in your chair, from the lightest to the darkest. You know, I've seen black makeup artists messed up Alec Wex makeup backstage, you know. Like, I'm trying to say, Alec, you know, come over to me, girl, I got your foundation color. And then she sits down with someone and gets up looking like, you know, very gray, you know. So I definitely I definitely try to do, like, whoever I can do. Like, one of my girls is Coco Rocha, and Coco is so light that if you put the wrong colors on her, it's going to show up like crazy. So just making sure that you can do the makeup on anyone that sits in your chair.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was some good advice, though, because a lot of times, you know, sometimes makeup artists and even hairstylists will get caught up with doing a certain type of look in their book, and then when they go to an agency, you know, I've known people who have so much in their book, and the agent would say, you know, I can send you out to, or I can refer you to some of my friends who do Fashion Week Day, but you don't have enough in your book. Like, if I'm going to send you on a job with Mary J. Blige, I wouldn't know if you could do her makeup or hair.
Yeah.
You know, based on the pictures that you have in your book, it's great work, but it doesn't represent, you know, what we're looking for as far as working with the celebrity. This is great if you're going to go do Fashion Week, you know. So I think sometimes,
right.
or just like you, the example that you use, you have everyone in your book but a black woman, but then if you're trying to get a job doing something with Essence Magazine, this is not going to work, you know. So
yeah.
I think it's important that we know that we need to have a little bit of everything in our book.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely true. A little bit of everything, and then your best work. And even if you, what's really good right now is having images of mature women. Like, even if you pull together a test shoot, you know, look for someone that isn't 14 or 15 that
right.
has flawless skin. You know, like, get someone that is like a regular person or someone that's been modeling for a long time. I just did a photo shoot with Oprah Magazine for, it's either going to be like November or January issue. And I had somebody that was just a regular person, and we really glammed her up, and, you know, it was a makeover segment or issue. And, you know, just stuff like that, like, even if it's not an Oprah Magazine shoot, but just using someone that's maybe not, you know, a supermodel that's, like, you know, so perfect. Like, people want to know
right.
your skill. And doing makeup on mature skin is a little bit different than doing makeup on them. So, you know, making sure that you master that as well. Like, I have a few clients that are a little up there, and if I did the same makeup on them as I do on, you know, someone that's 20, 25, they're going to look really bad. So, you know,
right.
I definitely making sure that you address that issue as well. And it can be represented in your book as well. And when they see that, they can send you out for a ton of different things.
Right. That's a good point. That's a great point, actually. Great point. Let's talk a little bit about Dior. What's new for spring with Dior?
Well, right now, we're kind of like spring, summer. So
mm-hmm.
it's the collection is called Transunt, and it's really cool because it's like these neon orangey reds and
mm-hmm.
really bright cobalt blues and navy blues. So it's definitely like more of like a, almost like a sailor look, but a really
mm-hmm.
cool. The lipsticks are like kind of bright. The lip glosses are bright. The bronzing products are so pretty. Dior just came out with this beautiful product that's called Glow Maximizer, and I love it because
oh, yeah.
it looks good on light, medium, and dark skin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it even goes into my skin without making me look ashy, and that's unheard of when it comes to, like, a luminizing product. And I think it's because it has, like, a light golden kind of tone to it. So when
okay.
it hits my skin, it just makes me, like, kind of glowy golden. Like, a lot of times I'll put it on my arms and mix it in with some lotion. But it also looks
mm-hmm.
good on light and medium skin tones. But they're coming out with a ton of kind of, like, brights, which is good. Like, even, like, you were
yeah.
mentioning nails earlier, like, a lot of bright gel nail colors. They have, like, maybe 20-plus shades that are new.
Yeah.
That are really, really bright. And, you know, I love color. You know, I think that my style is colorful. It's not like neon all over the face. you know, but it's definitely like clean skin with like a bright neon lipstick or a dark lipstick. But, you know, I love pops and splashes of color. And that the collection that's out right now, like I literally didn't give away any of it. Normally I'll give away a few pieces and keep a few pieces when something comes out in the way of a collection. This one, I kept everything, and I even ordered another set for LA Kids because, I mean, it's just a beautiful collection. And they even have, like, these little nail stickers that say CD that you can paint over. So, you know, I think I'm going to rock that on my thumb this summer. I'm going to have a little Dior nail.
Did you say just your thumb?
Yeah, just my thumb. You know, I can't really, I try to step out of the box a little bit, you know, to get a little funky, but I'm, like, about to be 36, so I'm like, I can't be walking around with, like, nail polish on and stuff anymore. You know, those are back in my Mac days where I used to come with, like, eyelashes on and stuff. And since then, I've evolved. Like, I can't stand makeup on my face these days. But I might rock a little Dior thumb. I looked at it, and I was like, hey, I can pull this off. So I might rock that this summer.
Well, speaking of that, let's talk a little bit about the makeup artist's image. You know, what should we look like when we go and make people up? And it's not necessarily about being in front of celebrities, but just in general. I mean, if you're doing a wedding makeup or working on a film and television set, and I know different, you know, film and television is different than going into a photographer studio. Photographer studio is different from going to someone's home or hotel room. But how should we present ourselves as makeup artists as far as the way we carry ourselves, as far as how we dress, you know, the bright polish like you're talking about on your nails? How should we look?
Yeah, you know what? After all these years, I will say that I've gone through a lot of phases. You know, I've gone through hair phases. I've gone through makeup phases and all this stuff. Now when I show up to work, I don't know if it's just because I'm like a 35-year-old man, but I look professional but casual because you don't want to show up looking like you are working behind the counter, even if you're working behind the counter, okay? When you're doing a freelance job, you want to look a little bit more relaxed, okay? You don't want to show up in a suit or, you know, a button-down. Like, you can, but it's just like, you know, if you have a dress on and stuff, like something that looks like you're working at a counter. People, publicists, people getting married and stuff, they like to see more of like somebody that's kind of working out there in the industry, you know. So I do like a dark jean, and my assistants, I have them wear like, you know, dark jeans. If they want to wear a skirt, they can do a skirt with like a little tank top or something, you know, depending on where we are. I'll do a T-shirt, you know. I'll make sure that the T-shirt doesn't have anything too obscene or like a naked lady on it, you know. I ended up wearing this this Dolce & Gabbana T-shirt to a job. It was really cute, but it had Betty Page on it, and you know, Betty Page is so iconic, but that just became the talk of the photo shoot, and I felt like it was distracting because everybody that came in was like, oh, I love your Betty Page shirt, and the photographer was like, okay, can we get this show on the road? So I try not to wear anything that's too busy, you know. I'll just wear, like, a shirt with, like, subtle prints. And if you have tattoos, you know, some people love tattoos, some people don't. If you have piercings, some people love piercings, some people don't. I used to have my labret pierced. It went over well on most occasions, but there were certain occasions that, you know, that wasn't really what the client was feeling. You know, so I definitely think represent yourself as an artist, but definitely look professional, you know, and look like you put yourself together. Don't look like you just rolled out of bed, even if that's the look you're going for, because no one wants you really in their personal space if you don't look like you need to belong there, if that makes sense.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. Do you think as makeup artists or just some of the makeup artists that you've just seen, do you think we all sometimes fall short in that area when it comes to just the way we dress and
I've seen some makeup artists come to jobs and hair people come to jobs, and I'm like, did you shower? Like, I mean, not even to be shady or mean, but I'm just like, oh, my gosh, like, you really, like, there was somebody that had, like, a shirt inside out. You know, it was just, I don't know, and clients noticed that, you know, so I always kind of play it safe. Like, I try to stay in dark colors. I don't wear anything too, you know, loud. I mean, I know that we always live in black, and that's kind of like our staple color, but I mess around with grays and, you know, dark greens and just kind of darker tones. I don't like to come in and just be, like, really electric, and not that there's anything wrong with that. I just feel like, you know, your job is, like, behind the scenes. You know, that's what you're doing, unless you're doing something that's on-camera work, but, you know, behind the scenes means your job is to do somebody for their wedding, you know, to make them look the prettiest that they can be, you know, not to walk in with your makeup all fierce, hair done, fierce outfit, like 10-inch stilettos, and, you know, and you're walking in like, and I mean, and it, there's nothing wrong with pulling yourself together, you know, but just make sure that you know that you're going to be standing around on your feet for a while, and, you know, if you wear heels and you can't wear heels, like my sister does hair, and she cannot not wear heels, you know. She just started wearing wedge sneakers. So she wears heels when she goes to work, you know, but she doesn't come in looking like she is going to the club.
Right.
That's important to know the difference.
Absolutely.
What is beauty to you, Ricky?
What is beauty to me? Beauty to me is just really like kind of embracing imperfections. You know, like I love eyebrows that don't match. Like if someone's eyebrows are too perfect for me, like the perfect kind of symmetrical eyebrow, it kind of makes me not know where to look on the face. Like I just stare at their eyebrows because they're too perfect. So, and I love freckles. I love dark circles. Like if someone's like, oh, I have dark circles, I'm like, oh, let's load up the eyeliner, you know, because that actually makes the darkness that they feel is dark look a lot lighter. And some people think that, you know, just caking on concealer is going to take away dark circles. And I just love like a classic look. You know, like I think if I had to name one look that I just love recreating, it would be like a classic old Hollywood look, like anything from like a Josephine Baker look to, you know, a Marilyn Monroe look or Veronica Lake. Or I was just researching something on Pam Grier because I'm going to be recreating something that she did in one of my new little mini series that I have for YouTube, but just like really powerful, kind of sexy, iconic, classic. Those things are all beautiful to me, but not necessarily perfect. You know, I don't love perfect. Like when I see an eye with like a perfectly winged out, drawn, and everything is perfectly blended and airbrushed looking, I feel like, you know, that's not really what we're seeing in fashion these days. And you have to make sure that you're staying on top of the current trends, you know. And right now the current trends is not the 90s airbrushed makeup.
Right.
I mean, not to say that it won't be, but it's just... Yeah, it's just not. Like, to me, that when I look at that, I'm like, oh, it's so nice, and it's blended, like, to the, I mean, they took that blending dome brush to a new level, but it's like nowadays we're not really seeing that much blending and that much highlight underneath the eyebrow and, you know, that kind of perfect liner, you know. It's like everything's kind of messed up nowadays.
Absolutely. And it's important for us to stay on top of that kind of thing.
You know, you want to know that's my biggest fear. My biggest fear as a makeup artist is, like, just making sure. My biggest fear, actually, is that my makeup skills will become dated. Because I've seen it happen before, And I know that it doesn't have to happen with everyone, because when I look at the stuff that Francesca does on Beyonce and that Billy B does on all his clients, and it's so new and it's fresh and it's fabulous, like, I'm like, yes. And then I have some other people that I know that they do makeup, and it looks like they were doing the makeup that was hot when they first started doing makeup, you know?
Right.
So my biggest fear is just making sure that I don't have, like, makeup that's dated or old school looking or not current. You know, I have to make sure that I know the trends and I know what's going to be coming up, because right now we're doing shoots for, like, November issues and December, and maybe that Oprah thing is going to be in January of 20, what's next year, 15? Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. I know, right?
Yikes. I can't believe I just said that.
Tell me one thing really quickly that you would consider in makeup considered dated.
Gosh, I think the concealer eyebrow, you know, I mean, because the obvious, like, dark lip liner, light lipstick, but I think that the concealer eyebrow, in my opinion, as just a makeup artist, like, I used to do it, you know, and I used to train it because it made the eyebrow look super flawless, you know, but people don't really like that, like, not even celebrities, but, like, there's definitely an audience for it. Like, when you're working with clients, if they request it, I can do it, but 9 times out of 10, that's what they're telling you that they don't like. Like, when you ask them the question, they're like, okay, I just don't like the concealer shape around my eyebrows. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, cool, me either. Like, I don't like it either. So, you know, I'm not going to do that to you. But I think that a lot of people still do it, and there's nothing wrong with it, but I just don't feel that it's current.
Right. Absolutely. I don't either. But like I said, there are a few who will request it. Very few.
Yeah. The box eyebrows with concealer and wax and all that stuff, and, you know, they're, like, laid down and all that. I mean, I get it, you know, and that's something that's really cool to bring up as well. Like, you know, even if it's not your style, you should be able to know how to do it if it's requested. So if something's not your thing, you should always have it in your back pocket. So if someone says, hey, can you put on 3 pairs of eyelashes on me because that's just my thing, then you know how to put 3 pairs of eyelashes on one person, you know? So, well, and I used to do drag queens back in the day, so I got it.
Oh, gosh. All right, last question. What inspires you?
Oh, goodness. In a nutshell, I think that I'm inspired by just people, like, admiring the art of makeup. You know, it inspires me to keep going on. You know, there's inspiration everywhere, but when I see someone that's, like, a young makeup artist that's really eager, that, you know, just really wants to learn, and they're a sponge and they just like to absorb any and everything. They want to come to your classes. You know, I have somebody that's going to Chicago because I'm going to do this keynote at the makeup show. So she booked a ticket because I'm not doing New York show this year, because actually the Met Ball, I think, is on the last day. But she's going to come to Chicago. So I'm like, oh, my God, I have to really, like, give something good for those 90 minutes that I'm doing the keynote, because, like she's coming to Chicago from New York just to hang out, you know. So,
just to hear you, right.
So, yeah, so that to me is what's going to keep me going on in this beauty game, you know, just giving out as much knowledge as I can, things that I learned. Like I said, no one taught me. I didn't know set etiquette when I first started doing photo shoots. I would go in the bathroom and Google what they were talking about because I had no idea. It was like they were speaking a foreign language. You know, so I try my best to rotate assistants and to do, like, little blurbs on Instagram and blurbs on Twitter, you know, little makeup tips, product reviews, whatever I can do to give out as much knowledge as I can, because I'm not the keeper of knowledge. And also getting knowledge from other people. Like, when I was in the makeup show in L.A., I sat in on V. Neal's class, and it was absolutely amazing. So, you know, learning and giving out what you've learned, I think, is what's inspiring to me.
Nice. So shout out all of your social media accounts so people can follow you.
Oh, well, I am at Wilson Ricky because Ricky Wilson is taken, and this guy will not give me my name. So I'm at Wilson Ricky. Yeah, it's his name, and I'm like, ugh. So, yeah, just Instagram and Twitter, Wilson Ricky, and my site is Cloutier Remix/Ricky Wilson, and Facebook, you can send me a friend request, Ricky Wilson. Just do my main Facebook because my Ricky Wilson Beauty, I haven't been updating in like a year and a half. I actually need to deactivate that account. I can't have too many social media.
It's too much.
Yes, it's too much going on.
Trust me, I do understand.
And then you have to do them separately, and you're like, okay, really? So, yes, it's a lot.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Thank you so much, Ricky, for joining us tonight. We really do appreciate it. I'm so happy that you were able to come over.
My pleasure, my pleasure. I've been looking forward to this for a while. I am very, very happy that you guys have me.
Very happy to have you here. You're going to have to come back a little later on down the road and keep us up with what, you know, keep us posted as to what you're doing. And we'd love to have you back on.
Oh, definitely. Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. For those of you who listened out tonight, if you enjoyed tonight's show, you can go out here on Blog Talk Radio and mark it as a favorite. You can leave us a comment there. Or, as always, you can join us on our Facebook page, Beauty Talk Online, and share your comments and thoughts about tonight's show. And let's see, what else do we have for you? Let me switch it over to my sister Denise. She might give out our social media account.
Yes, so before I do that, this one last announcement that I totally forgot about this week. But our guest from last week, Patricia Baskin, was on, and I just wanted to mention something that she has coming up later this year. Patricia presents the 2014 Makeup Skills Conference, October 26th through the 28th. The cost of the conference is $1,595. That includes your hotel room. But also there's a mandatory $25 resort fee, and this class is limited to 280 students. Again, limited to the first 280 students to register. It covers makeup for high def, television, film makeup, makeup for print, airbrushing, highlighting, contouring, and much, much more. And basically, I think Patricia just wants everyone to learn the basics and learn them the proper way. Again, it's the 2014 Makeup Skills Conference, October 26th through the 28th. And moving on to that information that I stated earlier that I wanted to give out, which was the Beauty Talk BBM channel. That channel PIN number is C as in Charlie, 002, E as in Edward, B as in Boy, 072. Again, it's C002EB072. And for those of you interested in being part of the Beauty Talk chat group on BBM, you can go to our Twitter page and you can leave us your PIN number and we will add you from there. So the Beauty Talk Twitter is Beauty_Talk. And then the Instagram page is Beauty_Talk_Media. And then the Facebook page is Beauty Talk Online Radio.
All right. Thank you very much. And, again, we appreciate you guys tuning in, listening tonight. And we'll chat with you next Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thank you again, Ricky, and everyone have a beautiful and blessed day.
Good night. Thank you.